The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hi everyone, welcome to Backstory Sessions. I'm your host Matt. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hey everybody, it's Kat, and I want to welcome you to this episode of Backstory Sessions. I'm joined today by my co-host, Matt. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Kat. Hey, everyone. How are you?
Back to the drive-in. What a great title and subject for a documentary.
Yeah, for sure. Have you been to the drive-in recently?
I have, actually. I mean, depends on, you know, recently is relative, but... You know, during the pandemic time, I did go see, you know, like a lot of artists were doing concerts.
Right.
And they would broadcast them over drive-ins. And so me and a couple of friends went to a drive-in and saw Bon Jovi.
Oh, right. Yeah, I remember that. Didn't you wasn't there an issue with your battery going dead or something?
Well, so, you know, drive-ins have changed because prior to that, I had not been since, I would say Greece. So that's like, what, 78 or somewhere around that for Greece.
Oh, Lord, that was when they had the speakers hanging on the window?
Well, they did have those, and so that's what I was expecting. But, you know, there's no more speakers hanging
right,
on the windows. And probably a good thing, because, you know, I have had an issue with my window, like, going up and down on the driver's side. So I kept thinking, like, how am I going to hear? Because, you know, like, when my window won't go down. So anyways, that has since been resolved and everything. But, you know, those are gone. So that is a non-issue. Now, you just put your radio on. They tell you, you know, what channel.
Right.
And so that's how you hear the sound.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you know that?
I did, actually. I don't remember the last time I was at the drive-in, but they did have those, I believe. So.
Wow, so you've been, like, you know, in the more recent years.
I want to say it was, I can't even remember when or what movie or whatever, but I guess they've been doing the through the car stereo thing for quite a while now.
Okay, well, and when I watched Grease, they were still doing the speakers on the windows that, you know, with the little commercial thing, like, don't pull away, you know, with it hooked to your car.
Right,
so.
Yeah.
But, you know, the problem was, well, one of the problems was that to, like, many people brought, a portable radio with them.
Right.
And they just put that frequency on and they listen in their car that way. Because, you know, if you leave your car on for extended periods of time and we, you know, like you get there early, you know, especially if you haven't been for a while, because you don't know, like, with Bon Jovi, you know, is it going to be like a concert where, you know, you're going to be in line for a long time, like waiting to get in, like, you don't know all those things. So we went early.
Right.
And so we just started, you know, the radio thing early too. And I mean, Bon Jovi have probably done two songs.
Yeah.
And boom, the battery died.
Oops.
I know. So it was like, you know, now what? Because you can't really just listen to everybody else's because, you know, it's in their car.
Right.
So Michael, who is one of the friends I was with, he had seen another friend, you know, in this pre-time that we had, pre-movie time.
Right.
And they had an extra radio. So we listened to the radio. You know, he was able to borrow that, and we were able to hear the concert, you know. But then we're thinking, like, you know, now what? Like, when it's over, what are we going to do?
Right.
So another thing that's new, at least since I was at the drive-in to see Grease, they just have these little, like, stands that have, you know, jumper cables and battery thing on them. And they just, like, it's almost like taking your order, you know, all these little people just come out pushing these and they just go through jumping the carts off.
Well, I guess, you know, I guess you gotta have that.
Well, I mean, it's sort of like, here's your sign, you know. Here's the ones that, you know, like, need some special help.
Yeah.
You know. But anyways, I mean, it was an interesting experience to be back at one. You know, it's a lot different as an adult than, you know, I mean, when I saw Grease, I was a teenager.
Right.
And then I, you know, started going to drive-ins when I was really young with my parents would bring me. And you know, like, I don't remember, like, the things you notice at different stages of life are very different. So, you know, it was nostalgic. It was Bon Jovi. And, you know, it was friends. Also, it was a pandemic where it was good to be able to do something, you know,
right.
Like, just to feel like you're back out in the world in some way. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of like my drive-in experience. But when I heard about the documentary that we were going to get to talk to April Wright, I knew it couldn't be wrong.
God.
You know, she has that name.
Right.
But I was really excited because, you know, I love drive-ins. I love nostalgia. It's just kind of cool to me.
Aren't they building a drive-in near you?
Well, it looks like it is built. It is, you know, like, on the the big screen is up, and
So it's just not open.
It is not open. You know, I'm hoping, like, the weather now is, you know, getting pretty warm, so I'm hoping it won't be long until we might have the newest drive-in there is in the United States.
That's right, yeah.
And that is in Barberville, Kentucky, people.
Right. Come on down.
The Knox Drive-In.
There you go.
Yeah, free advertisement. I mean, don't come until you, like, see an ad saying they're open. But when you see that, you know, come.
Right, or you can just drive by and see it.
Well, now, we do not encourage people to steal.
I didn't say steal. I just said drive by and see it.
I know, but, like, if it's something, like, you see that's interesting, you might just, like, you'd have to pull over, right, or something on the side of the road. And
I I mean, I've been in Barberville many, many times and driven by the drive-in and never felt the need to stop and, like, take pictures of it, so.
Well, I actually did take pictures and a video and everything, you know, of the daytime, you know, it wasn't, obviously, it's, like I said, it's not open yet, but,
right.
You know, I was curious, like, different stages of it, you know, what did it look like, and, you know, I kind of knew, like, not to look for those speakers, right. You know, and the little poles that, used to be.
Yeah, between the cars.
And that kind of marked your parking spot, right? I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's, so drive-ins to me, like, now, when I'm looking at just the space of them, you know, they look kind of ugly, right? I mean, it's just like, it's like a big piece of, you know, land with with a big screen that kind of looks ugly.
Well, I mean, what else do you need, right? I mean, a snack bar?
Yeah, well, and even that, though, doesn't, you know, like, it doesn't look like all that appealing, like when you're a child, but you know, of the night when everything's lit up, like it looks way different, you know, when all the lights are going,
of course,
all of that. So to me, I guess that's one thing I thought was how amazingly different the drive-in looks of the day and of the night.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so, but it's just, I don't know, people used to, like, did you have a station wagon ever, your family?
We did, but I don't think I ever went to the drive-in it.
A lot of people would bring station wagons and trucks.
Yeah, trucks were big.
Yeah, because you could sit right in the back, you know, like,
sure.
A lot of people... you know, parked that way, so everybody just sat in the back of the truck and
right drank their beer and
yeah, you know, or the kids would sleep or whatever,
right, yeah.
Or played outside. Yeah, I mean, you know, like a lot of times we didn't even like weren't even interested in the movie when we were little,
yeah.
So it's like pre-babysitting you know, at that time. And I guess nobody was really worried. They didn't seem to be about us getting kidnapped or, you know.
No, probably not.
Yeah, I mean, we went to the concession stand and, you know, everything like that.
Yep.
So, just was a little different time, and that's what I think drive-ins, to me, it just brings me back to different times like that. So... And my parents, and, you know, just, I don't know, when I didn't really have anything to think about or worry about, just,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, different time for sure. I mean, I don't know that the experience is the same, or we would remember it the same, or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, going
I'd be curious, you know, in our group, we did a poll about it, and of course, there are now... a lot of people that have not been to a drive-in ever. So, you know, the nostalgia for some, I think, is lost because they didn't experience it yet. But, I mean, maybe, I guess it'll be a good question to ask April if she feels like, you know, they're like the pandemic certainly, I think, brought a lot of emphasis back for
drive-in. Of course, because you could go and, like you were saying, you could go and feel like you were out amongst people and, you know, still social distance and whatever. So, yeah, I'm sure that is the case.
So, but I just wonder, you know, like, now is that momentum going to last? Because, again, in our poll, most people responded they would rather stream movies at home.
Yeah.
Go to the drive-in or even the theater.
Well, that's because a lot of people don't want to leave their house now. So, I mean,
Well, I mean, it's become, you know, the new, like, norm, I guess, is that.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't watch things. Well, I mean, not really. Like, when we were growing up, you really couldn't get movies.
No. You couldn't download them or whatever. I mean,
right.
I mean, you could, but it would take, like, 3 days to download a movie or...
You could, like, tape something on your VHS, you know, like VCR, and, you know, hope that you didn't, like, somebody didn't tape over it, or hope that it recorded, period, because, but, you know, I just am curious, like, what's going to be the future of them, but, again, I mean, the one is opening in Barberville, and, you know, so maybe there's going to be...
A bar?
I mean, we can only hope, but a documentary is fascinating because I don't know a lot of the history of drive-ins, and it never occurred to me to make a documentary, you know, about that. So I'm excited to learn all I can. And
well, I mean, drive-ins have been around since... When? The 40s?
But no, I mean, certainly I was not alive at that time.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember, like, I think it was the 40s. It might have been the late 30s or something. But anyway, we'll find all that out from our guest, who we will
call. You know, I do remember, like, my dad... He didn't talk about going to the drive-in, though, but I remember they called it the picture show, the theater.
Right.
So I do remember when he talked about when he was young and the theater first opened, you know, like how exciting that was to him. So, you know, I think the drive-in... you know, to many is that same kind of experience, just like the first time that you get to see that big screen. And I mean, it is big. Like, that is one thing of the day you notice is like, you know, it's a big screen.
Yep. All right. Well, let's talk to April and we will find out what her documentary is about and, all about drive-ins as they are now.
Right on.
Oh, God. All right, here we go.
April Wright, I want to welcome you to this episode of Backstory Sessions. We are so excited to have you as a guest and to talk about drive-ins.
Well, I am happy to talk about drive-ins as much as you can handle. So let's talk about drive-ins.
Well, did you grow up with memories of going to the drive-in? Let's start there.
I sure did. Yeah, I grew up outside of Chicago in kind of a small town that was on the border of Wisconsin. And I remember growing up, we had three drive-ins that were pretty close to us. The Keno drive-in that was in Kenosha, the Grays Lake Outdoor and the Waukegan Drive-In, and those were in the regular rotation that my mom took us to every summer. So it was a big part of my childhood. I mean, seeing movies in general, but especially in the summer, seeing movies at the drive-in. So definitely implanted early as a cool thing to do.
Oh, do you remember, like, one of the first movies you saw at the drive-in?
You know, I don't. What's funny, people always ask if I remember my first movie, but we just really had a movie family. We saw movies a lot and went to movies a lot. So it's like such a common thing. It's all blended together. It's not like one moment struck me. But I, you know, I certainly remember seeing Disney movies and animated movies and like Herbie Love Bug movies when I was really little and stuff like that. But no, I don't have, like, some people do have that vivid memory. Like, I really remember seeing this, but I don't have that. It's just, you know, we saw movies a lot.
Well, so I do have those vivid memories, kind of, at least of, I remember my parents took me, I'm sure they wanted to go, and then we were just like, you know, there. But Walking Tall was the first movie.
Oh, that, wow. That drive-in. Now, that was a big drive-in movie. That yes. movie, I've seen so many like newspaper advertisements advertising that movie. Yeah, that was a big one for sure. So you were probably like in your pajamas in the back seat and watching
probably asleep or something, you know, by that point. But then I remember going to see Grease. So that's the, you know, next one when I was like kind of older and ready to like actually watch the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then
Grease has one of the best drive-in scenes in it, so it's course. Like adding a layer when you see it at a drive-in. Yeah,
I know. It's just like it's just not the same if you see it in any other setting, I feel like.
Yeah,
and then I have to share my pandemic drive-in story, because now there's like hardly any drive-ins around, but at least where I live. But there was one, and so I saw the Bon Jovi concert when they were doing the concerts during the pandemic. So, you know, those are my
So where do you live? Which drive-in is closest to you?
At that time it was Somerset in Kentucky.
Oh, yeah.
They since have closed, and I think maybe they're going to reopen. And now in Barberville, of my hometown of where I live, they're opening a drive-in. So it never has been open. So, you know, just all kinds of weird things to...
Wow, that's great.
Yeah. So what was your favorite part of the drive-in experience? Because, you know, there's more than just like watching the movie. There's like all kinds mm-hmm. of sensory things. So what is it about that you enjoyed as a child? Or
The two things that always stand out to me the most, one is the intermission trailers. And the funny part about it is that we didn't get to get most of the stuff because we didn't have that much money when I was growing up, but we were often allowed to go in and get ice cream. Like that was the one thing that obviously you couldn't bring with you.
Right.
Not that anybody should bring things with them into the drive-in. We need to support the drive-in snack bars. We definitely need to support that. But yeah, I definitely remember watching those intermission trailers and just, you know, wanting to get every single thing I saw of them. And the way they would do the countdown clock and the music, like that was part of the ritual, was just, you knew the movie might change, but those movies that were those intermission movies were the best, and they would be there every time. And to the point that we could like say the words to all of them and stuff, because you would see them every time you went to the drive-in. And then the other thing I remember is just the feeling of going into the snack bars, because you would go during intermission, and as a little kid, obviously it was busy, it was full. You'd try to go to the bathroom and see if you could get some ice cream or whatever, but just that smell of the fresh popcorn and the you know, just the sound of being in that busy environment in the snack bar is something I definitely can still remember from being a kid. So those are kind of my two things.
Oh, so was there a period of time?
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Where, like, you stopped going to drive-ins?
I think mostly just when they closed, I stopped.
Yeah,
because we went as kids, and then of those three drive-ins that were near me, the Grays Lake closed, the Waukegan closed eventually, but they were open pretty late. And then I still definitely remember going to the Waukegan and the Keno once I was in high school. During the summer, we would go all the time. In high school, one of my teachers was actually the projectionist at one of the drive-ins, so we would always see him there. And so, yeah, I went quite a bit. And then it's kind of funny, in college, I went to drive-ins, but I had sort of forgotten that I had. And then when I started making movies about drive-ins, some of my friends at college were like, oh yeah, remember you always made us go to the drive-in? I'm like, okay, yeah, I do remember going in college, like not as vividly, but I definitely did. And I definitely remember it. And then when I moved to California, the Van Nuys drive-in was still open here when I first moved here, and I would go see movies there all the time. But we also had closed drive-ins. So even before I left Chicago, there were closed drive-ins all over, and I would drive out of my way to drive by them and stop and look at them and just be like, why is this closed? What happened? What did this look like in its heyday? Why is it in such bad shape? What's going on? And I did the same when I got out here to LA. We had a couple really big drive-ins open. The Sentinella, that's the one in Michael Mann's movie Heat, that was still open and just sitting there, you know, vacant for a long time. And the one that's in Pee-wee's Big Adventure, the studio drive-in, was just sitting there empty for a long time. And I would go visit them, like, maybe this could come back. What, you know, what happened to it? And just really take them in. I was kind of obsessed in a way that, you know, why were they so big? Why were these marquees so huge and awesome? Why are they run down now? What happened? We still love cars. We still love movies. And so eventually when I started making films, I was like, this would be a good topic for a documentary. And actually my very first documentary that came out 10 years ago was about the history of drive-ins. And then this new one, Back to the Drive-In, was more like I wanted to go back to that subject, but dig more into the families that are trying to keep them going, because, you know, I really am all about trying to keep them going. So what's the history of them? Because I had not been from, like, since Greece until the pandemic. So that's, you know, quite a span of time. So I did not know, like, that the speakers, you know, that you used to put on your window or whatever, like, those are not there anymore. You know, all the technology advancements, right?
Yeah,
that's so funny. And there's a handful of drive-ins out there that there's one that I show in my movie at the Wellfleet in Cape Cod that they keep and maintain a lot of their speakers. But most of the drive-ins went to that radio sound. And originally they went to AM radio sound, and then it became FM. And so it just depends how good your car stereo is now. And also your battery. Yeah, although people get afraid of that. They're like, how can I keep my battery on the whole time? There are people that have to be jumped every night at the end of the drive-in, but it's usually like one car, somebody that, whatever reason, but it doesn't drain like you think. It's not something to be worried about, put it that way.
Well, it kind of did for us.
you were one of the ones that had to jump.
Well, actually, there were quite a few, you know, because we were.
Oh, like, really?
We were really panicked, like, oh my gosh, you know, who are we going to call? What are we going to do?
That's so funny. No, that's common at drive-ins that they have to jump. They jump a few people at the end of every night. Yeah. Oh, that's so funny.
I know. So, you know, this is good information for people that are going to be going to drive-ins.
Yeah.
I
just saw something a few weeks ago that Ford apparently, I think they filed some patents or something for like a drive-in thing for cars that would do all the things that drive-ins need, like how to, you know, put your headlights out and keep your battery charged or whatever. They had some sort of like drive-in package that doesn't mean it's going to be on cars anytime soon. But I was like, that's kind of interesting that they've designed this.
Yeah.
So, you know, probably who knows?
Probably for one of their electric vehicles or whatever.
Right. Especially for the electric vehicles. Exactly. Yeah, that's pretty funny.
So it sounds like you've had an interest. I mean, even when you were just talking about, like, stopping at, you know, drive-ins and, like, trying to imagine what they look like in their heyday and things like that, that you have the mind of a, you know, of someone who would make documentaries. So when did this start, your interest in telling a story through film?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was a film lover, like we were talking about. I went to films. It was always part of my life, something that I cared about. But I really got into filmmaking. I kind of had a horror movie made that I wrote around the same time I was researching my first documentary about drive-ins, and then I directed another film. And so all this was kind of around the same time in the mid-2000s. And then my first drive-in documentary, it took a while to finish it because I wanted to be very thorough for the first one. So I did travel to every single state except Alaska to look at their drive-ins and what was left of their drive-ins. And in some cases at the former site to see what's there, or, you know, so I was very thorough, and I literally went to over 500 drive-in locations making Wow. that movie. I drove the country spending like a month for two summers in a row, going through the South, going through the North. And I didn't need to be that thorough, but I just felt like I wanted to tell the whole story. And then I had this weird side effect that I went to every state except Alaska, and I went to so many drive-ins, like more than anybody. Yeah. Like there's a lot of people who go to drive-ins, and it's just like, yeah, nobody's even close to how many I went to. It's kind of weird. I didn't think about it at the time being a weird side effect, but in retrospect it is. So a side effect of all the research I did and all the driving I did and all the drive-in exploring I did is that I really do know a lot about drive-ins at this point. And I know a lot of the owners of the ones that are, you know, keeping them going. So it is definitely a fascination for me and a subject that I'm passionate about. And I think besides movies, I also like weird architecture. Like I love the Space Needle in Seattle. I love the St. Louis Arch. I like the Eiffel Tower, and, you know, so all sorts of like unusual architecture that has a showmanship about it or something unusual I really like, and drive-ins are that too. So I think there's also that architectural piece that intrigues me for some reason. Hmm. And I like cars, you know, so I think there's that side of it as well.
Yeah. All right, so you made the first documentary, and then you decided that you wanted to focus more on the families that make these drive-ins work day in and day out. And so back to the drive-in, is it 11 families that you, or 11 drive-ins that you focus on in this one?
Yes, because I realized that at this point there's not really the majority of the drive-ins, if not all of them, are family-owned. And even if they are multi-location, they're still family-owned businesses that have more than one drive-in. And my personal, I grew up in a family business. My family's business was a roller rink. And it's very similar because, you know, you're opening to the public. It's a family business. You have a snack bar, like a lot of elements were the same. And so when I started seeing what they're doing, what they were doing and the passion to keep them going and how they are family businesses, I could relate to that a lot. And I wanted to do this film to show just sort of behind the scenes what they put into it and how much, you know, tenacity and passion is involved to keep them going, but also just so much joy and importance to what they feel like they're doing and what they're giving to their community. These are things that you don't really think about. So I wanted to pull the curtain back a little bit and get people more engaged that it's not just a movie, that it really is something that if you care about, you should go to your drive-in, support it and help keep them around, because the people that own them are really putting their lives into it.
So how did you choose the 11 that you were going to include?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. Okay. So when I was originally going to show the families, and this was before COVID came, I was going to maybe show three and go really into depth. But when COVID happened and there was this sort of added layer and added spotlight on drive-ins, but I also knew everything wasn't rosy. You know, a lot of people thought, you know, during the pandemic, drive-ins are thriving, and they were, in a way. They were getting more attention, but they also had a lot of additional issues to deal with that the film gets into. And so I wanted to show that, and I didn't know the answer to this when I got on the road. I was like, you know, I bet they're all having different issues depending what state they're in, or depending what, you know, all these factors I thought would make a difference. So I tried to pick a really good cross section. So I picked very old drive-ins that have been around for many decades, and I picked like a brand new drive-in that had just opened 3 weeks maybe before I got there, brand new drive-in built from scratch. And I picked some with seven screens, some with only one screen, different states, different types of owners, young owners, older owners. So I picked as many different factors as I could to just get a big cross section. And then to my surprise, as soon as I visited two or three, I was like, none of these factors matter. They are all telling me the same story. They are all having the same issues. They all feel the same about it. It was just really great, I guess, you know, that they're so much alike and more alike than different, I guess. Ended up being something I figured out very, you know, after I'd been to a few locations, I was like, that's so interesting. I was not expecting that.
So who is a drive-in owner? Like, what's kind of the prototype?
That's a good question, and I think you'll see a little bit in the movie that there's a little bit of eccentricity, that this is not your typical path or your typical job, right? And some people grew up in it in their families. Other people, you know, just wanted to be involved in drive-ins or build drive-ins, but I always say that every drive-in takes on a little bit of personality of the owners, and they are family businesses. So that makes every drive-in kind of unique. And there's certainly an Americana aspect of it, of just sort of owning your own business and putting on your show every night. And so the type of people that do it, they just have to have that element of passion and dedication, because it's not easy, as you see in the film. It's not easy, but there's so much reward that they feel when they see kids come and have a good time. So it is people who, gosh, how can you say, that just are passionate and, you know, can deal with people, deal with the public, and care about keeping a place like this going, because obviously there would be easier things they could do. But there's also just a great sense of pride and ownership in what they're doing. So kind of cool.
So it's more than just someone, you know, going in at a little before dark, or somebody taking the tickets and someone starting the film. So you spent like a day or night with each of these. So, you know, what is it like from the time that, you know, someone has to be there? Like, what are all the steps?
Well, yeah, what you just said is totally the thing, right? Is that we think like you just show up and the movie starts and that's it. Like, that's what we see most of the time going to a place like this. But that's part of what I wanted to show in the movie, was that I would get there when the drive-in owner showed up. That would be maybe 2 or 3 in the afternoon. And they start at that point doing preparation, getting ready for that night. And then, you know, kind of the next phase is eventually they open the gates once everything's ready. And then at some point they get the movie on screen and they open the snack bar. You know, there's all these pieces. And then eventually, you know, once the employees are there, once the customers come in, the tickets are sold, the snack bar is open, the snacks are sold, the movie's on screen. And then at that point, sometimes they have a little bit of a breather, and then eventually there's an intermission and the snack bar gets crazy again. And so I would start at 2 or 3 in the afternoon and just not stop until they could take a breather. And that would be maybe 2 a.m. depending. So yeah, it's long, long nights, long days. Some drive-ins are open year round, doing that year round, especially if you're in a warm climate state. Some just do it for the summer, and you can see why the summer is enough, because they get burnt out working all those hours. But yeah, there's a lot of time and a lot of passion put into it. And that's exactly part of what I wanted to share, is just to show what all goes into it. And then, like, the unpredictable, I guess, factors like weather. So what if you're all set up and it, you know, was a monsoon or something? I mean, I know, crazy, right? That's one of the things. And there is a drive-in in the documentary that deals with fog and a couple that deal with rain. And that is one of the unpredictable aspects of the business, that they are constantly tracking weather. And, you never know. You know, you're going to put on your show every night, but there can be other factors that impact the attendance that are out of your control. And that's a tough aspect, right?
Yeah, so, look at the movie Twister.
Right. Twister is a great movie to see at a drive-in, though, because sometimes you get extra special effects.
So yeah, that's true.
That's
yeah.
Good. But yeah, you're right. I mean, there is this element of, it's almost like you're throwing a party every night, or you're opening to the public every night, and something might cause it to go wrong. And there's a lot of variables, right? So it does have to be people who can sort of roll with uncertainty, people who are willing to gamble a little bit, like with this business. It's true. So there has to be people that are willing to take some risks to be drive-in owners, for sure.
What state has the most drive-ins?
I don't know the exact count yet for this season, but I can tell you historically and presently, the states that have had the most, and this is funny because I would have thought warm weather states, but no, it's Pennsylvania, New York, and Ohio.
Wow.
There you are.
Yeah,
those are the three biggest drive-in states, and they used to be, back in the day at the peak, those three states had the most. And now that there's fewer drive-ins, they still have the most. And I'm not sure which is in the lead right now, because there has been a lot of changes over the past year. We're still not sure who's actually going to open for this season, but they have the most. And someone told me that that's mostly just population driven, that there was so much industry in those three states. And that as the country kind of grew up, that there was just a lot of population, and therefore you needed a lot of drive-ins in those states.
Yeah. The town I grew up in New York, there's still two there, I believe.
Really? Where's that at?
Poughkeepsie.
Okay, Poughkeepsie. Yeah.
It's on the Hudson River, about 75 miles north of Manhattan.
Yeah, I think I do think I know of at least one drive-in that's near there. But yeah, you're right, probably more than one are in the surrounding area. Yeah,
there's the Overlook, and I forget what the other one is.
I've been to the Overlook.
Yeah,
that very pretty drive-in. Yeah, that it's very nicely manicured and very pretty, and like trees around it and stuff. I definitely remember that one.
Yeah,
I think that one's literally for lease right now.
Okay, yeah, it could be. I haven't been up there in 3 years, so I don't get up there.
That one or the Hyde Park. Hyde Park might be for lease. One of those are, but yeah.
Yep, there's a creek right by the Overlook where we used to go drinking all the time.
Yes, that definitely has been part of drive-ins.
Which state or which drive-in that you went to was the most extravagant, and what would be the extravagance?
That's a great question. I think it depends how you want to measure it. One of my favorite drive-ins, and it's actually changed, but the Admiral Twin in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
When I made my first documentary, they still had their original screen tower, and it had started as a single screen, but it became a two-sided. They added a second screen on the back of the original screen, so it was a two-sided screen, which was pretty rare. Some drive-ins had those. That was one of them, and they shot the film The Outsiders there.
Oh, cool.
When I went to visit it, it was one of my favorite screen towers, because it was all wood, And we went inside it, and it looks like a wooden roller coaster. Like, it just hit all wooden beams, and it was huge. And it was 9 stories tall.
Wow.
So the height of a 9-story building. And it actually did end up burning down, but the community rallied and they rebuilt it with a metal frame that couldn't burn down,
right.
But they built it in the same shape of the original one. But that was probably one of what I think is one of the more extravagant towers that I've seen, but there's still some of those original, big wooden towers.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Brazos in my documentary has one of the original towers, and I always like those. And some of them had housing in them. So any that have that are pretty cool. And
wow.
And then the other aspect is the marquees.
Yeah.
And like in my film, the Benji's Drive-In has a huge, awesome marquee. I have a quick shot of this at the beginning of the film. The Twin in Independence, Missouri has like a huge arc over it, real big sign. That one is one of my favorite marquees. It's just huge. You
cool.
drive up to it, like, wow, why did they build this so big? It's so awesome. And then I suppose, some with like the other one in my film, the Galaxy has 8 screens. I think they had 7 at the time I was there. And that's crazy. You're like,
yeah.
How big is this operation? So I guess when you say extravagant, you could measure it all different ways.
Yeah, I was thinking more like, some place that had like, car service or, like an extravagant snack bar with like sushi and whatever.
Well, I kind of showed a little bit of that in the movie. Like, yeah, the Coyote does deliver out to your car. The Greenville has a bar where they have themed drinks to match the movie. So,
oh, cool.
Like, when they were showing the Big Lebowski, and the drink of the night was the White Russian, of course.
Right.
So, I think that's one thing that drive-ins can do probably a little more than indoor theaters. Is customize it so that, if the drive-in owner wants to have a special thing, they have more ability to do that. And that's why you get these really unique experiences at drive-ins sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh, I'm getting something at the door.
Uh-oh.
I think it's just something I need to pull in. Yep. We don't have to stop.
Okay.
Quick delivery.
You're fine.
I'll
edit it out. So be.
Sorry about that.
Oh, that's funny. All right, Kat, are we here?
All right. So, in the documentary, do you talk with any of the patrons that are there, or is it mostly focusing on the families that are running the drive?
Yeah. I felt like I had seen, maybe this is because of the pandemic, but I felt like I had seen a lot of coverage where people were talking to patrons. And I just kind of felt like I didn't want that to be the focus of this. I really was trying to look at it more behind the scenes. I have a little bit sprinkled in with patrons, so you get a little bit of that aspect of it, but I was mostly trying to take the perspective of the owner so that you could see the other side of it that you don't usually see. But I did sprinkle in, a few patrons, a few other employees here and there.
So I imagine, as you were saying, the pandemic, was a popular time because there weren't a lot of activities, depending on where you live, to be able to do. What happened, as people got back out into the world, do we know yet if drive-ins are impacted, or are people still going, once they started going, did it become like a habit?
I don't think we know yet. I mean, so the pandemic, the first year 2020 happened, and that's when they were kind of the only show in town. And that summer in particular, when not much else was allowed to be open, the drive-ins picked up the slack for all sorts of things. They hosted high school graduations, church services, stand-up comedy, just all every type of thing, concerts that other venues were closed. Drive-ins had a lot of that, which was kind of cool because they started as gathering places and hubs for their communities when they were originally built. And so that came back a little bit during COVID, which was cool. And then when I went on the road, which was summer 2021, other things were opening up. And by then they were starting to see some of the additional COVID effects, not just other competition for places to go and sports being back and things like that, but all the things people were dealing with, like having a hard time getting minimum wage employees, that all the restaurants were having a problem getting, drive-ins were having the same. And the supply chain issues, they were having problems getting, you know, popcorn containers, getting nacho cheese. So
nacho cheese.
Yeah, right. A lot of these things are covered in the film. And then Hollywood started releasing a few movies, but not back up like normal. So that was kind of an issue. And then by the time you get into last summer, Top Gun came out. That made a huge difference because everybody wanted to come out to see Top Gun, and especially Top Gun on a drive-in screen was great. People went to indoor theaters too. And so I think last year was a little better, but not great. And they're really hoping, I was actually at the drive-in owners convention last month, a few weeks ago. And actually, when I was at that conference, they made me an honorary member of the organization, by the way, which was so nice.
Oh, awesome.
such an honor. Yeah, such a huge honor. And so I think they're optimistic about this year, that there's better movies coming out and movies that draw a drive-in audience, especially family-oriented movies. So I think they're pretty optimistic. But I'll tell you, there's been a lot more activity around drive-ins, closing, being sold, changing hands, even new drive-in or older drive-ins that haven't been open for decades reopening. There's just a lot of churn right now. And so I don't know where it's all going to land yet. It's kind of like we're in the middle of a transition. And I think since before the pandemic and now, the total number of drive-ins is actually decreased in the last few years, because there was about 305 of them before the pandemic, and now I'm quite sure we're under 300 and maybe quite a bit under 300, but we're kind of waiting to find out. So I don't know. The question is up in the air, and that's why I hope people see my film, and if they have a drive-in near them, that it reminds them to go visit it and support it and help keep it going. Because it really is a question mark right now. Are people going to keep going to drive-ins? They, you know, a lot of people rediscovered it during the pandemic, but is that going to stick? You know, it's, I don't know. I hope they do. My heart is in it with all these drive-in owners, because I think that's one thing you get when you watch the movie, is you really see their passion and their determination, and you want them to succeed. And I hope they do.
So price wise, it seems like with theaters, at least, that people have not gravitated back to those, even though they could. They're not nearly as popular, it seems, at least in this area, as they were before the pandemic, because now people stream a lot of things, or you know, they just watch. They've just, I guess, gotten in the habit of doing that. But with drive-ins, like all the things that you mentioned, it seems like that they have that unique opportunity to customize, you know, whatever showing, and to bring people in, at least for that experience, if nothing else. So I hope that, you know, that's something maybe that gives them a little edge to continue.
Yeah, and you're right. The streaming competition is a big deal, and that was another thing. Obviously, the pandemic gave the studios a chance to see what would happen if it didn't go to theaters and it just went streaming or whatever. And I think most of the studios have now realized that the theatrical piece is very important. It makes a different impression of the movie when it first comes out that carries through the whole life cycle of the movie, that more people know about it, that it's just better. So hopefully theatrical will be pushed a little more by the studios than it had been. But you're right, with the drive-in, you have it, that it's not just a movie, it is an experience. And a lot of times it's a double feature, and sometimes they do retro movies, and sometimes they do events, and you know, so there's more to it because it is like a more full experience when you go to the drive-in, for sure.
And who doesn't love a dancing hot dog?
Yeah, exactly, right? The dancing hot dog trailer is the best.
Yeah.
And then you got the nostalgic, you know, that element as well. I'm sure like a lot of grandparents or, you know, parents that grew up with that experience. Once they're kids, they like want to share that. So, I don't know. I just have a lot of good memories of my family and, you know, friends at different times with the drive-in that just seem like experiences more than, you know, that I have of like, oh, we went to the movies or whatever. I think what you just said is it in a nutshell, and this is what I kind of came to realize, that it's about creating good memories. It's about creating family memories. It's not necessarily about the movie, but when you go to the drive-in, it creates memories with your family, with the people that you're with, that you remember like forever. I don't know why it does that, but it's just such a magical experience to go hang out with people, see a movie under the stars, have the food, like all of that. It really creates good memories that people carry with them. And I think that's one of the most important things that come out of the drive-in that make people love it.
And where else can you go to get a Bargo Lot? I mean, you know, the, what is it, the insect thing that you burn?
Oh, the... That was the PIC, the pick, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I don't know of any other place that you can get one of those.
Yeah, that you can burn that. And, I'll tell you something funny. I've seen, like, the old trailers they used to play, just like Dancing Hot Dog Trailer. There's old pick trailers.
Yeah.
And it's like a spiral thing that burns and keeps mosquitoes away. Honestly thought that went away with my childhood. I really did, until I went, you know, into this topic of drive-ins, and they still exist. The company still makes them. I had no idea. I was not expecting that. Yeah, it depends where you are. Like, I'm in California. We don't really have bugs and mosquitoes, so we don't have the piece of the experience, but I know through the Midwest and the East Coast that depending where the drive-in's located, that can be a thing with the bugs. And so every drive-in has different things that you can burn or spray or whatever, that becomes part of, yeah, exactly. Yeah. The mosquitoes.
Yes.
I did grow up in Chicago, so I know mosquitoes, but we don't have them in California, which is one benefit of being here.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right.
So did something funny happen during the filming of the documentary?
Ooh, that is
unusual things that maybe the owners had to deal with, or
that is a good question. Anything unusual? No, I can't remember anything like really strange or bad happening. I mean, I definitely had some pretty severe rain at points when I was there, but obviously for certain locations that became part of their story. No, it was really a good experience. I mean, I drove for 3.5 weeks when I made this movie. So I drove from Los Angeles over to Texas, north to Nebraska, through the Midwest, through Illinois and Ohio, up to Niagara Falls area for the transit drive-in, to the Greenville drive-in in New York, to Cape Cod, and the Benji's in Baltimore, and then I drove back. So yeah, took a long
cross-country road trip by myself. And I had my primary camera, I had the drone, and then I had a GoPro that I did time-lapse from empty to full, day to night. And so I just, like, each location, I just pretty much shot for 12 hours straight, just running all those things. And, yeah, nothing really wacky that I can think of. I was very lucky to just have things go pretty smoothly. I don't have any crazy stories, unfortunately.
Darn it.
How long did it take you to edit once you got to
while? Yeah, and I edited myself. This movie has so much of me personally in it. And that was the other reason I made it, because it's like, okay, well, during the pandemic, you can't have a big crew. Like, a lot of production wasn't happening. And I'm like, well, this is something I can mostly make myself. And even when I go to shoot, I'll be outside. And, you know, so it just, and then I have learned to edit over the years with all the different documentaries I've made. So a lot of it, until I got to the end, and then I had other people do the score and the color and all the finishing stuff. But there's definitely a lot of me personally in this documentary. And the editing took me a little while. I don't remember, like, how many months, but many months. Yeah. And what I did was I shot it summer 2021, and then about a year ago in the spring of 2022, when I went to the drive-in owners convention, I wanted to show them a rough cut, just to see if they had any feedback. So very unfinished, no, you know, no color, no sound fixed, temporary score, all that. I showed it to them about a year ago, and then I had a rush to get it completely finished because a lot of drive-ins put it on their big screens for drive-in day.
Oh, cool.
Which was June 6th. And so we did that last summer, and then this summer on June 6th, this is actually the 90th anniversary of drive-ins. The very first one opened June 6th, 1933, and so now in 2023, it's 90 years, which is really crazy.
That's wow. Awesome.
Amazing.
So from a documentary, like, production, turn it around quick, this is probably one of the quickest documentaries I've ever made. You know, that I shot it one summer, and then the next summer it was on big screens. Pretty fast. Cool. I'm lucky. You know, that things went according to plan on this one. Although, obviously, there's so many things that can come up. But, yeah, nothing that I can think of. I mean, one of the funny things, I don't want to give too much away, but when I was on Cape Cod at the Wellfleet drive-in, they had some fog come in. And I had been, flying my drone to get these beautiful aerial shots at all the drive-ins, and there was fog. And when the drone came down, I was really worried about it because it was just dripping wet from being up in the air with all the fog. And that it just never occurred to me. You know, you would think, like, I wouldn't fly my drone in the rain. You probably wouldn't want to try that. But the idea that it came down as if it had been in the rain, it was so wet. I was like, uh-oh, I hope I didn't hurt any of the tips or whatever. But that was something that kind of worried me a little bit. But overall, this was a very lucky shoot that I can't think of anything major that went wrong.
So what's next for you? I mean, now that this project is done, and I'm sure you have other things that you're doing, but
I have a lot of things in the works that are documentaries and also feature films and things like that. But especially in documentaries, when I was on the road making this, I did shoot B-roll for a few other documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
One that will be about roller skating, like the history of roller rinks, kind of like my first documentary about drive-ins, where I covered the whole origin and the whole history over different eras. I'm going to do that with roller skating, cool. with bowling alleys and with amusement parks, but like regional family-owned amusement parks.
Yeah.
not the big Six Flags, but there used to be little amusement parks all over our country. Sure. There are some left, but a lot of people don't realize there were once a ton of them. So those are three new docs I'll be working on. And then I'm also, literally today, I was working on helping a friend finish a documentary that she had shot about girl skateboarders. Oh. And so we're finishing that one up, and it should be out pretty soon, later this year, probably, if we're lucky. So, yeah, I try to keep a lot of things in the works and just, you know, subjects that I'm interested in for documentaries, for sure.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, Kat, one last question.
Well, what do you, so I guess, where can we see the documentary? That would be a great question. Yeah, so back to the drive-in, like I said, we did play in theaters last summer, which was awesome. Got a great response, great reviews, and now it's coming out video on demand on March 14th. Okay. So that's the next release to look for it. So, yeah, and it should be, I don't know exactly, I'm sure it'll be on iTunes and Amazon and cable TV and all the places where you can basically, like, rent a new release is where you can find it.
Great. And what do you hope when people watch it? What do you hope they take away from it?
I hope it inspires people to find the nearest drive-in and go visit it and support it and have, you know, remind yourself of that experience and just go check it out firsthand and help keep them going if you're into that.
Well, I certainly I have loved this topic. I was so happy since I told Matt, like, we've never covered and had an episode where we talked about drive-ins, and so I was so excited when I knew we were going to be able to do this. So,
well, I just think, I mean, all the things we've covered on this call, like, they're they did them in other countries. Canada has some, Australia. But it's just such an American thing, and it's just such a great family thing, and you can create all these memories. And I think we need more and more things like that right now, especially that you can do in person, not on your phone, not on, you know, TikTok or whatever, and just go somewhere, have a good experience, have a good time, support a family-owned business, create good memories, especially after being locked up for years. We all need to do stuff like this. So hopefully more people see the film and it makes them want to go support their drive-ins.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it. And we hope that you'll come back and talk to us about the roller skating one, because that's also something that's near and dear to my heart.
Awesome.
Skated for a long time and, have some good memories of that. So hope to hear about that one too.
Thank you having me. I really appreciate it, and you had really good in-depth questions, so I really appreciate that too. Thank you.
As always, if you have any questions, concerns, or comments, you can send those to Kat at iwriteplays@outlook.com, or you can write to me at backstorysessions@gmail.com or matt@level11ventures.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care. Yeah.